Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with you today. I have been away, and it's wonderful being back here. And I'm actually working from home, but I can see Craig, and I've been looking forward to this program. I've actually called this program Purpose in the Pain, because purpose gives us hope. And I have just returned from Israel, and Israel's anthem is called Hatikva, the hope. And it says, our hope is not yet lost, the hope that is 2,000 years old, to be a free nation in our land, the land of Zion, Jerusalem. Coming back from Israel is always difficult because I do feel that I always leave a part of my soul behind. Even long before I was ever Jewish and I went to Israel, I felt the healing power of Jerusalem especially and the Kotel, the wall. And the energy is palpable. And so many people have told me that. And obviously, you know, now I go back as an Orthodox Jewess, and the feelings are as magnified. They're wonderful. Today, I have a few audio clips for you to listen to as well. And I'm talking about the finding meaning in suffering. Now, as we arrived at the airport, Ben-Gurion Airport, wherever you are, going down the escalator, in the lifts, there are photographs, there are big posters of hostages, of freed hostages, of families of hostages, families of fallen IDF people killed in the terror attack on the 7th of October by the terrorist Hamas. Sorry, I lost my voice for a moment. However, there is this deep sense of connectedness. It's that feeling that of the power of the we instead of simply the I. And Israel is a land of hope. And I do believe it is because of this we, that it's the we that connects them. It's the Israelis to know that they're all in it together. They know that they'll be expected to give a few years of their lives to their country. They have this common goal, a purpose, and it definitely connects them to one another. And there is always a hope for the better future, that the future will be better than today. I went with a friend to Israel very unexpectedly. My friend Charmaine Marcus Jacks said to me, didn't I want to come to Israel with her? And initially, I said, no, I can't come at the moment. And then I went home and I thought about it and I sent her a note to say, Shah, are you absolutely sure you want to share the apartment with me? And she said, no question. So I booked my seat and she and I went off to Israel. And it was the most wonderful, wonderful visit. I hadn't told my youngest grandchildren that I was coming, and the surprise was so worth it. My little granddaughter Elisheva, who is 7, could not believe her eyes when she saw me standing behind her mom. But you know what was the first thing that she told me as we walked out of the school? She told me that they have a niklat, and I asked my daughter what that was. And she said, it's a bomb shelter. You can call it a mamad if it's part of the building, or if it's downstairs or wherever it is, it's a niklat. Well, when we got to the house, the apartment, what was the first thing that she wanted to take me into? It was the niklat or the mamad. But this one is down there on like the third floor. This is right down at the bottom. and she wanted to show me, and it was made up of a couple of rooms, heavy, heavy doors, obviously. And that's what she wanted to show me. Not her toys, nothing else, just that Niklat, the Mamad. And I found this incredibly sad. I just thought, you know, what little child of seven feels the need to show me the bomb shelter? And so often we are told that it's only the people in Gaza, the Gazans, who are suffering. And I would like to say that that is not true. The Israelis, there is a feeling of tension in the Israelis that I've never experienced before. They are hurting and asking questions. And it is that question, once again, of what is expected of us? What does the future hold? The people who didn't believe in a future have already, the others are there to stay and to do whatever they can to help. And that is another thing that I found incredible. You know, so often people say that the Israelis are very unfriendly. And I must admit, you can pass an Israeli in the street and you can say shalom and they'll walk past you. Or otherwise they'll look at you very surprised. But in South Africa, it's the opposite. You would never walk past anybody without greeting them first. If you're going for a walk on the street, if you pass them on the pavement, outside a shop, you greet a person. That's the African hospitality, which I believe we are known for, and it's absolutely wonderful. But that's not in Israel, and I don't know if they ever actually will be like that. But the strange thing is that they are there for one another, and if you need help, they are there immediately. And I witnessed this at one of the malls in Israel, when my daughter had gone into one of the shops and I was sitting on a bench waiting for her, and I was just near an escalator. And the next minute, a woman, very laden with parcels, pushed her pram up to the escalator. And I must admit, I thought to myself, good heavens, what on earth is she going to be doing? How is she going to go down that escalator with her baby and the pram? And the next minute, two people, not even associated with each other, two total strangers, went up. One took the baby out of the pram. The other took the pram. The lady took the parcels, and down they went down the escalator. I actually looked to see what would happen at the, you know, on the other end, the bottom of the escalator. And I'm sure they said, thank you. I'm not sure what they said, but they all went on their separate ways. And I thought to myself, wow, that is wonderful. Now, I must admit, the only other place that I've ever seen that is here in South Africa, where people respect the elders especially and step forward to help us. That is our country, South Africa, too. And that is what can be so special about us.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with you. If you'd like to telegram me or WhatsApp me, you can on 061-895-1019. Going back to Israel again, what I did also notice was so much connection, so many flags, but Craig is telling me that I've got an audio clip playing now. Thank you, Craig.
So your basic philosophy is that life has meaning under all conditions, but how easy is it when there's a sense of hopelessness, a sense of despair, to recognize this meaning?
Let me confront you with a somewhat strange definition of despair. As I'm used to proclaiming is that despair can be explained in terms of a mathematical equation. D, capital D, equals S minus M, What does it mean? Despair is suffering without meaning. As long as an individual cannot see any meaning in his or her despair, he or she will certainly be prone to, in its suffering, I wanted to say, no meaning in the suffering, he or she will certainly be prone to despair and, under certain conditions, to suicide. But at the moment they can see a meaning in their suffering, they can mold it into an achievement, they can mold their predicament into an accomplishment on the human level. They can turn their tragedies into a personal triumph. But they must know for what. What should I do with it? But if people, like so many segments of present-day society and population, cannot find any meaning whatsoever in their lives, cannot see anything meaningful, they more often than not have something to live by. I'll say at least enough to live by. They cannot see anything to live for.
What is the answer to the question, why me? Why did this happen to me?
The answer to such a question is nothing that a psychiatrist or any other type of a scientist can come up. But I would not share the opinion of, say, Jean-Paul Sartre, who said we have to accept and to shoulder courageously, heroically, the absolute meaninglessness of our lives. But what I think is rather that what we have to accept is the incapacity of our humanness, the incapacity to recognize the ultimate meaning in intellectual or merely rational terms. This is the only thing we have to accept. But still, we may believe in ultimate meaning, but to lead someone, say a patient, to ease the way for him to such a belief, to faith, is of course not the business or job to be carried out by a psychiatrist, but rather by a theologian.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with you again. And you were listening to Viktor Frankl, and he was talking about turning tragedies into a triumph. And when I chose that audio clip, I did especially because what I saw in Israel was a change. The Israelis were before the terrorist attack in 7th of October 2023. They were a more tolerant people, I would say. But right now they are hurting and they are furious at the judgment of most of the world. They're very hurt. And when the coffins of those little Bibas children were taken through the crowds and they saw the cheering Palestinians of all ages, it shocked and rocked the country. And I think what rocked us even more as a diaspora Jew as well was the fact that no one spoke out about it. It was just pushed under the rug and once again we were told that we were being taken to South Africa, was taking us to ICC for a genocide case. But where was the sympathy? Where was the acknowledgement of the pain that is actually being felt at the moment? The fact that many of those who were ruthlessly murdered or taken hostage were actually peace activists. And people spoke about that widely. And, I remember, and I've mentioned it before, that some of them who were murdered in either in captivity or on the 7th of October, were taking little children, Gazan children, to different hospitals. They would collect them. They would take them for to the oncology departments for their cancer treatment. And then they would take them home and deposit them back with their families. Now, those people have been ruthlessly murdered, many of them. And every time that I have been in Israel, there have been protests. In Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, streets have been closed. There's always some sort of protest. But often they've been marching, singing and shouting. And a few times I've been caught up in these. And actually, they've been very exciting. But right now, I would say that the emotions are running very high. They're trying to get the hostages out. There's dissent about how to do so. And there's anger. There's anger. And yet, underneath all of that, there is this exceptional resilience. The resilience goes from the people in their well in their 90s right down to the little children. And that I find incredible. Someone said, I think my daughter sent me this, that was on a Facebook thing. It's from, it's Kiva Fane. That's obviously probably the name on Facebook. Being a teenager in Israel means waking up to a rocket siren at 4 a.m., rushing to the safe room and waiting for everything to settle. And then hours later, getting up and going to school just like it's another day. It means living with the reality that missiles can be fired at you while the rest of the world barely notices. It means being exhausted, but knowing that life does go on. This is not normal, but it's our reality. And no matter how many times they try to break us, we are still here. This is obviously a teenager. He says he's a teenager. And that is part of that unbelievable resilience. Right now, Israel is going through fighting an existential battle. And the more people who can support them, the better. Whether it's on social media, whether it's by visiting Israel, it's obviously whatever you can do to help, please do so. Speak out. Don't be a bystander. Speaking out is not that difficult. You can put it on your social accounts, on your social outlets. When we went to Jerusalem, to the Kotel, what was wonderful to see was that there were so many tours and people from all different backgrounds, different countries, different colors. I can assure you, apartheid has never been a part of Israel. And if you go to the Kotel, you will see people of all kinds praying with their heads next to the wall or next to sitting next to each other. Certainly no apartheid there. And what was absolutely wonderful to see, we went there on a Monday, and on Monday they take the Torah out as one of the days they do. And because of this, there were a lot of bar mitzvah boys having their bar mitzvahs there because they were going to be reading from the Torah. And there were balloons. And what I like to see, what we all like to see, it was my daughter Shira, my friend Charmaine, and I. What we really enjoyed seeing was these balloons. There were lots of white balloons that the people in front of each bar mitzvah boy were holding. But in amongst those balloons were orange balloons for the Bibas family and yellow balloons in honor of the hostages. And there was singing and dancing as they were going, and they were blowing the ram's horn, the big shofar, which was wonderful to see, actually. So that was fun and brought unbelievable energy in. And sitting at that wall, I always get the feeling of history, of thousands and thousands of years of people with their heads resting on that wall, praying for peace, praying for health, praying for a better world. Now, hope, what I started with hope and the tikvah, it's not passive. It actually manifests in what you hope for. What is it? If it is helping somebody else or helping yourself, Right. But what is right with the situation? Looking at it like that, what can we find that is positive in the situation? And then we can also look at what is wrong, but not totally focusing on that. And it takes willpower to actually keep hope alive. And hope is something that I did see in Israel. Went to the hostage square. There were lots of school children having outings there, being taken around, which I was pleased to see that they were, you know, being shown what was going on as well. And then I also received a YouTube yesterday of a group of South African men who happened to be part of our community, and they were dancing. Also at the war someone was getting married, a stranger was getting married, and it was so lovely to see this group of young men going up and joining the dancing around the groom. It was fun. And all of that does keep hope alive because it's a connection. And it is to say to ourselves, whatever is happening is larger than ourselves. And what the pathways to achieve the change is in ourselves, our attitudes. And also, hope is the belief that the future will be better than the past. And that it's not by taking a passive position. It's not by sitting back and saying, oh, well, let the life unfold and I'll just sit here and wait for it to unfold. No, that's not what's being asked of us. Whether we are in the diaspora or in Israel itself, we are all being asked to take to look at the situation and to ask ourselves. I don't want to say to ourselves, I'm not taking a passive position. It's by taking action. And how do we do this? And once again, we've seen it in our communities around the world and in South Africa. And we've also seen it in South Africa in Friends for Zion, our Christian friends of all nationalities who are standing with Israel. And it means so much to fellow Jewish South Africans and certainly to the Israelis. And in Israel, people of all ages are doing whatever they can to relieve the burden that the young soldiers have had to take on. So whatever they are capable of doing, whether it's going up to the borders to feed the IDF, to give them a hot meal, to bring their laundry back, to wash it, to take it back again. You know, it's really wonderful to see what all the different areas that you can help in. It's sharing that burden in whatever way that they can. And here as well, I cannot believe what all our communities are doing to help in whatever way, whether it's in community prayers, whether it's in community baking of kitkas or challahs for Fridays, handing them out. We are all doing something positive, and it is a sharing of that burden and feeling that whatever is going to happen, we are doing something. So hope is about taking action towards a goal for a better future. Now, if you have the power or the will to do something, I would say do it. Do it now. Don't wait for tomorrow. Do it now. Connect with others. One thing I really do appreciate is friendship. And being in Israel was fun, sharing with my friend Charmaine. We would do our own things during the day with our families. And then by nighttime, we would sit and chat, sharing what our days had been. And it reminded me a lot of boarding school when we all used to get together. And also of nursing, because in nursing, we used to come off duty, we were on night duty or day duty, whatever. and we would all go back to the nurse's home and all congregate in each other's rooms and chat about the day. And somehow, whatever had happened during the day, and sometimes the days had been very hard, but once we were able to share them, it relieved a lot of that anxiety and the pain. And just talking about nurses, I'm probably in one of my next programs in a few weeks, I'm going to be telling you about my nurses. We've got a nursing group. We all trained many, many, many years ago. We made contact just before COVID, and we are all meeting next week again for lunch. And it's been wonderful sharing this with you. We were all so young. We were 18 when we were nursing. And now, well, I'm not going to mention how old we are, but let's put it this way. I know that we will meet with humor and the connection will be great. The other thing I wanted to say was humor. Viktor Frankl so often mentioned humor and how even in the depths of hell, in the concentration camps, humor gave them a spark to hold on to stay alive. What we have all listened to, a lot of many of us, should I say, not all, but many of us have been listening to the hostages, the freed hostages stories, and they have been absolutely horrific. But above and beyond the horror has been the connection. Even when they have not been allowed to speak, they have been able to share a look. They haven't been allowed to touch each other often. And yet it's just that connection goes way beyond touch or voice. It's often just in a body language or in looking at someone. Thank you, Craig.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
This is Sue, and you're about to listen to another audio clip. And this time, it's Viktor Frankl on why idealists are real realists.
You excuse me, but I know I am speaking a marvelous accent without the slightest English. Now, you know, you won't believe it. Gray hair of my age. I started taking flying lessons recently. Do you know what my flying instructor told me? If you are starting here, wish to get here, say east, heading for this, and you have a crosswind, you will drift and you will land here. So you have to do what we pilots call crabbing, he told me, C-R-A-B, crabbing. You have to head for north of this airfield, and you have to fly that way, you see, as if you headed in this direction. If you are heading here above this airfield, then you will actually land here. But if you head for here, you are landing here. This holds also for man, I would say. If we take man as he really is, we make him worse. But if we overestimate him, it's premature, your applause, you will soon know why. If we seem to be idealists and are overestimating, overrating man, and looking at him that high, here above, you know what happens? We promote him to what he really can be. So we have to be idealists in a way, because then we'll wind up as the true, the real realists. And you know who has said this? If we take man as he is, we make him worse. But if we take man as he should be, we make him capable of becoming what he can be. This was not my flight instructor, this was not me, this was Goethe. He said this verbally. And now you will understand why I, in one of my writings, once said, this is the most apt maxim and motto for any psychotherapeutic activity. So if you don't recognize a young man's will to meaning, man's search for meaning, you make him worse, you make him dull, you make him frustrated, you still add and contribute to his frustration. While if you presuppose in this man, even in this so-called criminal or juvenile delinquent or drug abuse and so forth, there must be a what we call spark, yeah, a spark of search for meaning. Let's recognize this, let's presuppose it, and then you will elicit it from him, and you will make him become what he in principle is capable of becoming.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with you again. If you'd like to send any messages, please do so on 061-895-1019. Now, Douglas Murray talks about also how the youngsters have stepped into their role, and it's what Viktor Frankl said, that look at a person beyond what you're seeing, expect of them more. And you know, it's what can I expect of life is not the question. The question is, what does life expect of me? And what I noticed in Israel this time, which I hadn't noticed before, was how many fathers and grandfathers are very involved in the children's lives. It's wonderful to see. A lot of the young men had young children with them, and I surmise that the women might have been called up as reservists or whatever. And obviously they take turns. If the young man's in the army, then the woman takes over the family, and that's how it's shared. But it was very nice to see. And the one funny thing was that I was sitting having an ice cream with my little grandchildren, and right down the main road in Renana, my daughter tells me I pronounce it far too in an English and too much of an English accent. Ahuza is the street. Anyway, there are benches and there are chairs, and you can sit wherever you like. And what absolutely always amazes me is that you can sit right on the edge of the road and have a waffle or a pancake if that's what you ordered. But there was this man, a young man, sitting with his little child, and next to him sat his dog. So the three of them were on this bench, and it was the funniest thing to see, because they were watching the traffic going past. There were buses and lots of cars. It was I would say rush hour traffic, but most of the time it's rush hour traffic with traffic in Israel. Anyway, and there it was, even the dog, the little child, the father and the dog, all their heads were moving backwards and forwards, to the right, to the left, should I say, not backwards and forwards, but to the right and then to the left, as they followed all the movement on the main road. It was so cute to see. So, and then the grandfathers, one day we went to go and collect my grandson, and I said to my daughter, Shira, why? I thought there was a problem, because there were all these men standing outside. So I thought, oh, my gosh, there must be a security issue or something. And I said to her, why are there all these men, those older men there? And she said, no, those are the grandfathers. They come and collect their children. She said it always makes her feel very, very tearful seeing them all there. To me, I'm sure it does leave her feeling tearful. For me, I found it very meaningful that they were able to, the grandfathers were doing lifts. The energy in Israel is incredible. As I said, there is definitely a tension in the resilience and in the energy, but it has to be right now. It's expected. There are groups of people everywhere. And in the Shuk, we went to the Shuk, the market in Tel Aviv, and it was incredibly noisy as usual. And it was also very funny, because there was two men who were at opposite stalls, opposite each other, and they were both singing. So the one would sing one part of the song, the next one would pick it up and sing the next part of the song. And people were dancing and moving and chatting, and it was lovely to see that that goes on. That essence of the love of life does go on. I must admit that that I have always found very, very, very moving. As far as hurting is concerned, Israel will never be who they were prior to this terrorist attack of the 7th of October, and nor should they be. They are going to be far more aware. And I do believe that they are going to be looking at the world with not with tinted glasses, not that they ever have done that anyway. Craig, I see you're telling me to that you're going to be playing another. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Craig.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, you're about to hear another audio clip, and the time is moving very quickly. This time it's Douglas Murray on the people of Israel. It's very short, but I really enjoyed what he had to say.
Everybody asks themselves, what would I do if, you know, the situation that my forebears went through? Everybody of my generation in the UK thinks, what would we have done in my grandparents' generation? Young Israelis have shown what they would do in their grandparents' generation. And they've shown not just their grandparents, but the world. And I want not Israelis to compare themselves to the rest of the world. I want the rest of the developed democracies of the world. I want their people to compare themselves with the Israelis.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Wasn't that beautiful? That was Douglas Murray, and he said that he would like the rest of the world, the rest of the democracies, to compare themselves with the Israelis. Wow, what a recognition of the resilience, the strength, the unbelievable courage. Pablo Picasso said, the meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away. And I do believe that that's what's happening in Israel today. Everybody of all ages are having to find their own purpose, whether it's in the IDF, whether it's supporting the IDF as families, whether it's marching for the hostages, demanding their release, whether it's the hostages who have come out, the freed hostages, who are incredibly courageously speaking out about their experiences in order to try and get their fellow brothers and sisters and brothers in arms, sisters in arms, freed as well. You know, over Purim, I read this, that the Lubavitcher Rebbe had said, and we don't have to say it's for Purim, I would say it's for every day. When we who are free celebrate Purim as best we can, we send power, life and strength to those who cannot. We send them the strength to persevere and rise above their hardships, so that soon they will be free without harm and with joy. And I think that is something that is being asked of us, to face life, to face it with happiness. We are here for a purpose. Fulfill a purpose. Take on our lives with more responsibility, with happiness. Share our lives with humor, with connections. In the Jewish report, I just had to add this because of South Africa's ambassador being sent back from America, I thought to myself, wow, I need to share this, because I think so often the place of Jews in South Africa is overlooked. And in the Jewish report, there was this great Jewish entrepreneurs of South Africa, and it was the great Jewish retailers in South Africa. And it was Checkers. These were all started by Jews. Checkers, Pick and Pay, Woolworths, OK Bazaars, Mr. Price, Ackermans, Fashini's, Truworths, Cape Union Mart, Dis-Chem, JD Group, and plus many smaller retail businesses. Isn't that amazing? Look at all those major stores that are still going. Many, sometimes it's the third generation running them, but that's how they were started. And then I saw this lovely, there's a picture of two very wrinkled older people in bright clothes. They look like hippies. Maybe that's why I like them. And it says, I aspire to be a giver of love, of good vibes, a giver of strength. And I think that is what we all need to be doing. You're going to, at the very end of this program, you're going to be hearing the song afterwards. It's not going to come through on the podcast, but please listen to it yourselves. It's called Gimme Hope, Joanna, and it's a song by Eddie Grant. And yesterday on Benji Shulman's program, The Big Blue, on Chai FM, he mentioned this song as a song about Johannesburg in apartheid times. Well, I was absolutely amazed. I remember singing along to it, not ever realizing really what the words meant. But listening to this actually gives me hope for change. Change will happen in its own time. Change will come to South Africa, to Israel, and change in our own South Africa, which has failed in the expectations that we all had of it when apartheid failed, came to an end. So this is really a lovely song to hear. Apparently, this according to Benji, the Eddie Grant, who wrote the song, is again his British singer. And he visited South Africa during the apartheid years and went back and wrote the song. In it, it says, well, Joanna, she runs the country. She runs in Durban and the Transvaal. She makes a few of her people happy. Oh, she don't care about the rest at all. She's got a system they call apartheid. It keeps a brother in subjection. But maybe pressure will make Joanna see how everybody could live as one. On that note, I'm going to end. May we all find a reason greater than ourselves to go on to make a difference in this world and to make a difference in other people's lives and our own. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Vusi. And thank you, Makundi.